I don't feel great in my own skin.
Flex Lewis, you're straight out the lair. Today's guest was born in Tokmak, USA, but later called Germany his home after his parents left to find a better life. He has been a dominant force in the fitness industry of many years, winning the amateur world championships before winning numerous accolades for FBB Pro shows, including the prestigious Honor Classic. His journey has not been without challenges, but he's always persevered and come back stronger than ever. His resilience, determination, a true testament to his character, and in this podcast we talk about all of the above, including a sprinkle of some private trips to the pyramids, unseen by many, and some talks of some aliens. Here's a podcast with my favorite people in bodybuilding, Dennis Wolf. Dennis Wolf, welcome to Straight Out the Lair, my man.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for having me, and it's been a while. We've talked about it during the... This is me.
Look at this guy. Do you want to answer it? Yeah. Put him on blast to see you're on a podcast.
Sorry.
It's all right.
We talked about it during the Olympia weekend.
Yeah, so, yes, we did. We did.
And now, finally...
Yeah, I know.
We made it.
We spoke before then. We've been trying to put this together for a while. We were trying to do it the Olympia weekend. It was just... So many people, and you had contractual obligations. I had things going on too. But anyways, we finally got you here, and literally you have your own gym up there in Low Mountain.
Close to Low Mountain. Close.
I wasn't going to give the exact details, but the Wolf's Den, doing all kinds of crazy workouts there in the snow outside. You're a madman, man. It's fucking rocky up there with you.
But you're seeing what we do now. We train at 6 a.m. every morning, except the weekend.
Yeah.
The weekend, I need some recovery time. Yeah. I'm 44, so it's not 24 anymore. I feel it. So, yeah, we trained, me and my buddy. And then another good friend joined us like a couple of weeks ago. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So I changed it a little bit compared to what I was doing before. And now I try to kind of start the day with the workout, just increase my testosterone naturally and start the day. And actually... Feels amazing,
but it's freaking cold up there, man. If you're training at 6 o'clock in the morning, and right now in Vegas, even though it's what 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm wearing a hoodie. It's not exactly warm. We're gonna have warmer months coming, but it's cold as hell in the morning and it's snow.
I'm gonna tell you, this is the worst spring in Las Vegas. I've been here since 2010.
Yes, I've heard.
And that's we're in April. It's still cold. The last weekend was amazing. Uh-huh. But now it's cooling off again.
I know. So. You're still out there, though.
But hey, the only issue training in the morning is the wind.
Oh,
is it windy or not?
I live a little bit down the street to you in Summerlin, and the wind factor coming through off their mountains are unbelievable, and you're more exposed than me. So I couldn't imagine. If you're trying to do a bicep curls, I'm sure your fucking hands are all over the place, man. You're thrown all over.
But yeah, sometimes you see the trees, they bend.
And you're still outside.
Yeah, we're still outside. But with... We all say there's no bad wear. It's always mm-hmm. the bad clothing.
Yeah.
If you're prepared, if you know what's up. Because we've been doing that for a while now. I have this gym for over 1.5 years. And we train like, 3 months, no, 2 months mm-hmm. now at 6 a.m. But during the winter, even there's no difference. 6 a.m., 6 p.m., it's still fucking cold.
Still cold.
Yeah, it's freezing. Man. But that's a funny thing. People think Vegas is in the desert. We always have a hot weather. But no, man, we have 4 months or so.
I know.
Very disgusting weather.
I love it.
Yeah, I love it. But it's at least sunny. That's what I like. But compared to Germany or Europe or Great Britain, whatever, you don't see any sunlight for the whole winter?
Oh, my God. In the summer, you don't see sunlight, man. But that's one of the reasons why you and I are over here. But nice little segue, talking of us coming over. Take us back to the beginning of Dennis Wolf's story. You were born in Russia, right? Or you were born in Germany?
No. I was born in the Soviet Union. So.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So the people understand the Soviet Union was like Russia today. Everybody could travel... to all the republics, right? There were socialistic republics like Kyrgyzstan or Kyrgyz SSR, then Ukrainian SSR, Belarus SSR, Kazakh SSR, all of that, which became independent in 1991. Yeah, I was born in 78, pretty much enjoyed the life until that Mikhail Gorbachev came to power and he started that perestroika stuff. And that's where you start feeling everything is going to shit. But from my mom's side, the German side, we had opportunity in 1980 to move to Germany, but my dad didn't want to. Because my dad, his dad, you know, my grandpa, I never met him, actually, unfortunately, too. He was at war, right, against the fascist Germany, and went through all the war and was in Berlin, came back. And when my dad married a German woman, he was against it. So since then, there were no contact between my dad and my grandpa. So that's why I never met him. So and then the next opportunity came in 1992, but already 91, we're planning to move. But in order to make it simple and easier to move or to move out of Istan to that time or Russia was the fastest way and the more secure way. And we moved from Kyrgyzstan to Russia. So it was Siberia to my grandma. So it was a village middle in Siberia. Freaking cold during the winter. But it was amazing for me as a kid. I was 12. No, that time I was, 11, probably. Oh, yeah, 11. And, we spent 2 years then in that village and finally became the papers. For people who think that the Germans are the same people who just flee the land, no, or the country. No. We have officially applied to move back to the homeland, right? So, and it takes a couple of years. Really? So they find a place for you where they need some workers, whatever. So it's not walk over the border and that's it. So it was all official.
They're basically allocating you.
So and it took us a couple of years and finally we got all the papers and moved to Germany. But that was a crazy story. We went to Moscow first to make the visa, right, to be able to travel to Germany. And we stayed in a hotel with, I don't know, every room was filled with 20 plus people. Stuff like that. I was like, oh, what the hell is that? I want to stay here. I was really down. I was a 13-year kid. And as we landed in Moscow, the taxi driver told us, okay, no problem. I'll take you there to the hotel, but I'm going to let you out at the corner. I'm not going to drive in front of the hotel because it was like big stuff. Everything crashed. A lot of crime were rising. And there were so many bad people who will kind of catch every taxi driver who will bring the people to the hotel because everybody knew that hotel is only for the people who's going to leave the country.
So people had all the possessions, all their money, whatever it would be, right?
Yeah, but they won't touch the people, but they will get some money from the taxi driver. That's why they won't stop there.
So what was it like you being 11, 12, 13 years old, coming from a small village, going to the capital of Moscow? Was it overwhelming? Was your parents overwhelmed too?
Of course, but my mom has been there before to apply for some papers. And of course, I would say I didn't see much from Moscow back then. Because we were like, straight from the airport to the hotel, and we would stay in the hotel 3 days before we got all the papers, and then we left. But on the way to the airport, like when we got our tickets and all that stuff, that was amazing because you were like excited. Oh, we're going to another country.
Fresh starts.
Yes, and as soon as we got into the plane, Lufthansa and the stewardess, or what is it, flight attendant today? Yeah, you can't say stewardess anymore, right? She was asking me, do you like a Coke? I was like, what? Yeah. And she gave me a Coca-Cola. So that was the first time I drank Coca-Cola.
On the plane?
I tried Pepsi before when I was very little, but Coca-Cola was special back then. Yeah. So that was it. That was my little story how I got into Germany.
And then how old were you when you got to Germany? So I keep on the timeline. 13 years old. So where was it that you went into the gym for the first time? And what age was that? And what was the draw that got you into the gym?
I've been very active in all kind of sports. But as a teenager, you're probably looking for something special, maybe what you were like very much or what you feel like that's great. But I never felt like I like anything except basketball because I used to play in the Soviet Union. And I ended up not doing anything actually officially. And then I started lifting some weights at home on the balcony. And I think I was 19 years old, made my first membership in the gym with a buddy of mine. So, and after 3 weeks, he would drop out, get some, I don't know, stupid explanation like, oh man, I have no time. But
yeah,
we were working at the same company.
No, if
I you know? And I fell in love with that. I think I fell in love with the pump, the feeling in the muscle. So what I never felt before in other different sports. So
yeah, there's definitely this to my first years in the gym. I remember playing rugby. On every rugby game, I played in the wing, of course. So every time I would go to like a rugby game or something of that nature, I would literally, after the game, go to the gym with mud on my knees.
Really?
And, yeah, everything else. And I would literally get everything that I thought I would get from rugby in that session. And you're talking about chasing the pump and everything else. I didn't really have anybody that taught me 101. It was me turning up and I knew and looking at everybody else that was going on in the gym. Okay, this is how you kind of weight train. And I followed suit. So then when I got more schooled and I started putting more worker regimes together, rugby was still my baseline, but I still craved that feeling in the gym.
You know why I felt the pump probably quick and felt the difference to other sports? Because in the beginning, I did everything by myself in the gym. So I didn't even listen to the trainers. So it's stupid, but that was me. And after 2-3 months, Then I start feeling like, oh, okay, what I'm doing is I feel it like for 2 days, I'm sore and all stuff. And then I start like listening to the trainers. They would say, oh, okay, so you need to do a bench press or incline press, something like that. Before that, I would probably do like flies and sitting on the machines, stuff like that. But yeah, so that's very important. Always listen to trainers.
How quick did you respond in the gym?
Ooh. I started training, I would weigh 74 kilos. So I don't know, what is it in pounds? 150, I don't know.
Okay.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I just guessed.
Same when I went to the gym.
And then after 1 year, I gained like 15 plus.
Maybe kilos?
20 kilos, yes.
Oh my God.
So I was over 90 after 1 year.
Yeah.
Over 90 kilos. And people would already started asking me like, hey, are you in prep for a show? What show?
What the hell is that?
Yeah, what the hell is that? What do you mean? And then, yeah, bodybuilding show. And then I said, no. And the time passes on and they will still ask me. And then, oh, IB or NABA, what are you talking about? Like, what kind
different
of
language?
Like, what?
Yeah.
And then someday, of course, the guy called, his name was Mike Schultz. He came to me and I was like, are you planning something? He said, no. Do you want to do something like that? He said, yes, but I have no idea what we are talking about. And I said, I know a guy. It's in another city. It's 20, 25 minutes from here. We go there, and he is in the federation, and he is competing. And then we went to this guy. It was a big guy, I don't know, 6'5", 290 pounds.
Oh, big boy.
Huge shoulders.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, not that big legs, but he looked like an American football player when he was wearing the shirt. It was just like impressive. And he asked me like, what do you eat? How much protein do you eat? And what? I don't know. And then after that, I started following everything more seriously. And I had 2 or 2.5 months until my first show. And the plan was to compete as a junior because I was 20 years old. And 1 week before the show, I turned 21.
Oh.
I couldn't compete in the junior division anymore, so I went straight to the heavyweight.
Yeah, see, so I was the same. It was under 21. Now it's 21 and under. They've changed the rule.
No, it's 22.
It's 22 now?
22. Oh. I think until 23 you can do junior or something like that.
Yeah, but you and I fell into the same category. Yeah. So you done your first show. How did you do in your first show?
Newcomer, so like novice division, I was second in heavyweight because back then there was no super heavyweight. I ended up being fourth. So
what about the juniors? You said you compete. Oh, no, you said because you were.
Yeah, ended up being fourth. That's right. And a year later, 1 year later, I took the overall.
In the same show?
Same show.
Oh, wow. So basically you knew that after that first show, you knew that you were going to commit yourself to this.
It's weird, but I could say 100% After the first show, I wanted that. Yeah. I wanted that so bad.
Yeah.
And that's why the next prep for the show, I was 22 already. Hey, everything worked out so smoothly. And man, and I was beating the guy who was the overall champion the year before. So I was beating him.
In 1 year?
Yes, in 1 year.
So just going back to your first show, walking on stage for the first time, what was it like for you? Were you confident or were you? Because I remember my first show, I had to turn this alter ego on. I was like a nervous wreck walking on stage. I had to turn this alter ego in. What did you do to get through that first show?
Yeah, basically everything what you can do wrong. I was so nervous. I left the house without making my hair or whatever. So I came there. Okay, there's no gel in my hair. Okay, so I wet, put some water in it.
Oh,
and that's like amateur stuff. Tell you, oh, you need some champagne backstage and stuff like that.
Champagne?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Fucking like, show you're competing in.
Yeah, yeah. Champagne? No, champagne, but the cheaper version. What is it? I don't drink that
we
stuff.
We had vodka.
I don't drink that stuff.
Cheap vodka.
So because of the alcohol and sugar, you get the pump and stuff. Yeah. And after one glass or half a glass, something went wrong in that OLC double kind of shit like that. And I felt, I will start shaking or whatever. I was close to maybe dehydration and not enough carbs in it, whatever. Yeah. And on stage, I had a lot of friends. They came out to support me, and that was amazing. I didn't feel like, oh man, I do something wrong, because I knew that was the first time.
Yeah.
As far as I can remember, it went smooth. It went smooth, but like I said, the prep the day before or on the same day or so the day on of the show was nothing good.
I remember, again, because we come from a different background, and the Europeans and the World Championships is really heavily pushed in Europe. I'm not too sure about the US, because obviously I won't living around here, but from us athletes in the UK, we knew who was winning the overalls in Europe. We knew who was winning the overalls in the World Championships, and that's your kind of trajectory, right? You went through the amateur ranks, and I think everybody was talking about Dennis Wolf before you stepped on stage at that World Championships, and you brought such an incredible package to your amateur overall that everybody in America, and I was living there at the time, well, who the hell, this is the next big thing. And there was people talking about you and Arnold in the same sentence because you had very similar looks and the accent and everything else. Take us back to that time. And was it a crazy time for you? And the World Championships obviously being as massive as it was and you winning that, blitzing that overall.
The reason why I went to compete at the World Championships was that the German IVB Federation wouldn't give me the pro card. Wouldn't apply for it.
Wow.
You only could apply, or only your federation, like from your country, could send a letter to Jim. So we have a guy who, you know, who deserved that or whatever. For example, Marcus Rühl was so big, they didn't want him to go to World Championships because he was looking already like a house, man, like professional.
Did you compete against each other during the amateur ranks?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
And then they told me, if you make the top five at the Worlds, you get the pro card. And I went there, I took the overall.
Smashed the overall.
Yes. It wasn't even planned. So my goal was, okay, in order to get the pro card, I need to be in the top five. And I was preparing for that as always, but no intention to win, because I knew I could make it easily in the top five.
You didn't think you were going to win?
I didn't. Look, back then, my mind was only the pro card. I didn't care about the title. I wanted to be a professional bodybuilder so I can compete in a pro league. And then basically, mostly if I was kind of not stressing myself about anything, I will win. So that was, it's stupid, but some people say, you know, if you focus on anything, if you really want it really bad, then you get it. But sometimes it doesn't work this way. So I feared that.
There's a lot of politics back in there too, especially when you're talking about different countries and whatnot. But I think that I know, just seeing that result, had anybody else that beaten you, it would have been wild, I think. But needless to say, you took the title, and I believe, if my timeline's correct, a couple of weeks after that, you and I met for the first time in Milos's gym.
No, not a couple of weeks. It was a couple of months.
A couple of months? Oh,
yeah,
okay.
It was right after my pro debut.
Oh.
Yes. My pro debut. Okay. So I won the World Championships in 2005, end of November. August 2006, yeah. I did my pro debut in Texas.
Oh.
At Europa Show.
Going.
You know, the Betty Parise and Ed Parise
Europa
shows.
Super Show.
Yes, yeah. So from that, from Texas, I went to Milos. And that's where I met you. Yeah. Milos, I, like, yes. I just landed there. Photos, oh beach, June, photos.
Yeah, he connected us straight away. We all knew you were coming into the gym. So many people were excited to meet you as well. And obviously, you had done your thing. So you walking into the gym. I think we had spoken maybe.
Yeah, couple words, but my English was so bad at the time.
My English,
and then
my
of English course, your accent. I didn't understand shit, man. I was like, what? Like,
no, I didn't. No,
but hey, your calves that day. I was so impressed. Oh. It was unbelievable to see something like that. It was just, they were like popping in your eyes.
I was training them back then too. But it was a photo of you and I in the gym, and I stood on top of a chair, jokingly, and Milos snapped it. And then we've got another one standing next to one another. But I love the fact that you and I have our own journey, and we've met periodically throughout that time. We have gone on to win shows together. We've gone on to travel, be sponsored by the same companies. And there's a lot of different things that we've been able to do in our careers, which I'm very happy about. But again, I think that with your career, there's certainly elements of your career that I think need to be more. I think you need to have more flowers in my eyes. I think more people need to put you on that pedestal as one of the greats. We obviously spoke off camera. And I think that I know. How many pro wins do you have, Dennis?
Six.
Yeah. But the big wins.
I mean, I won the Arnold Europe Tour, Prague Pros.
Two Prags.
Australia and
Keystone
Pro.
Yes.
Look, really appreciate that. Yeah. If you look back, that was a different time.
Yeah.
And I think it was harder to get to that level. And of course, it was just bodybuilding. Even the 2-2 started like in what? In 2000, I don't know. Eight or something, or nine.
Yeah.
Eight. So it was all open bodybuilding.
That's all it was.
That was the goal, to get as big as possible, as matured as possible, and get to that level where the other guys were, like all my idols back in the days.
Who is one of your idols?
Look, man, I would say Kevin Lerone for sure. When I start bodybuilding, also Flex Wheeler. Before I get involved with bodybuilding, I didn't understand why Dorian will win, because the structure was a little bit different than when Kevin or Flex will stand next to him. But as older I got, and then I start to understand why he was winning, because that was so
nasty.
Crazy, nasty, and he was huge and
thick,
grainy and dry to the bone, not anybody else. Yeah. And that's why he was winning. Yeah. And then, of course, if you will see him live, I saw him live at the FIBO, it was a monster. And I actually ran into it. I was running backwards because I was waiting for my buddy and ran into Dorian. He was going at the FIBO with his wife back then, was still married.
Yeah.
And it was like, what the fuck? I was like, oh, shit. Oh, it was Dorian.
Yeah. What year was that? And how old were you then?
That was, I think, 96, 97.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was my first FIBO. I didn't even compete, but I was already... No, 98. Sorry, nice. 98. Yeah. So.
I remember them times. I remember my first FIBO, too. I paid my own way. Yeah. I worked, and coincidentally, I worked on Dorian's booth.
No way.
Yeah, with Dorian and Ernie Taylor.
My first sponsor was I don't know, some protein stuff. After I won the German Nationals overall title, and there was Dorian Yates approved. You remember that?
I was sponsored by it. That was my sponsor.
But I was sponsored by the German guy.
CMP.
He gave me just, I don't know, a couple cans of protein a month. And after, 6 months later, I won the World Championships. Yeah. And then I signed up with Nutrix.
Yeah. And you were the face of Nutrix for a number of years.
Yes, 4 years with Nutrix. Yeah,
you and Amit Schultz.
Amit Schultz and Marcus.
Marcus Ruhl. Yes. Yeah. And a couple of hot chicks. Because I remember, you got to remember, I came off the boat.
Hey.
And I'm looking at these magazines.
Larissa was with Nutrix
Larissa
a long
Reese,
time.
Yes,
yeah, Larissa has a lot more. Yeah.
But I remember too, back then, and we're talking to the viewers that are listening to this and watching this, there was not many girls in the sport as it is right now.
Oh, definitely.
If you've seen a hot chick, there was about 50 eyes on that hot chick.
A lot changed.
Yeah, a lot has changed. A lot has changed. But a lot has changed in I think, in the good. You talked and you mentioned earlier that you felt it was harder back in the day. I want to jump in on that because social media, when you first started, wasn't really around. It wasn't a big part. There was no part of the industry. It was maybe in the infancy stage because you had the WW dots, right? Everybody had a website. Everybody had places that they could direct traffic to for their fans to buy the DVDs and stuff like that. But social media was really nothing big. And then you seen Facebook and stuff like that. I remember that you were one of the athletes that kind of got on that. I don't know how early you got on, but how did you see social media change for you as an athlete?
Look, I think all that Facebook, Instagram started in what, 2010, 11, 12, something like that. That was everybody was on it. But I was one of the last guys. I didn't like, what is it? I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. So why should I do that?
Yeah.
And people say, yeah, you can promote your stuff, blah, blah, blah. So all that guys who want to sell whatever they can. But before that, there were forums. You remember that?
Of course.
Mueller's had his forum. The Germans had like two forums. Yeah. He had forums. So
Chad Nichols had his forum.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yes. And that was the beginning of social media, right? So I remember being at Mueller's gym in Fullerton, and there was a seminar and seeing all the big guys. And after that, reading all the comments in forums. I remember even waking up in the morning, that was the first thing I was...
You checked.
I was checking it, like, forum. Oh, okay, what kind of news we have?
Yeah, that's exactly
but, it. Yeah. But after that, it kind of got into that you were... You got used to put something out, like, on social media. Before that, you will hide... You wouldn't care what people think. And for myself, that's how I was thinking. I will cover up everything as good as possible. You know? So the people will see you look different. You look, what is that? Yeah. But if I will wear a tank top all the time, that will be worse.
Yeah,
so
of
that's
course.
Why. And of course, we will train for ourselves, not for somebody who can watch you or whatever. And that's a big change compared to what was before, how we were thinking and how we would do things. But with Instagram, Facebook, it became more accessible for the fans.
Yeah.
It's good and bad because if you want to do something, then you have to keep going. So you cannot just put something out and then 6 months later, next post.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, times change all the time. And then I guess every 10, 15 years, there's something new.
Yeah. I just remember that you were on the forums and everything else, and we were shooting all that content in Milos' gym. And that was, like you said, that was like the entry point for me before any type of Instagram or Facebook. The forums were really big. And coincidentally, Milos just found the hard drive to all the photos. So yeah, he's been sending me some photos. I was like, oh my God. He sent me some a couple of days ago of me and Hide training in one of my first photo shoots that he done in his gym. So I know he's got a lot of stuff with you on there.
He's got millions.
Oh my gosh. Can you remember
pictures,
him back
videos.
In the day? He'd just be in the middle of his training session, pull out this fucking camera, this big...
Hey. At the end of the prep, right? I was prepping for the Olympia 2007.
Yeah.
I was already pissed because he wanted to see me like on... It was Tuesday. Yeah. I was shaved and Wednesday I would go to Vegas from Fullerton. Uh-huh. And I was shaved and shaved, everything already cleaned up and... Hey, tired.
Yeah.
He wanted to see me. I went to the gym. And he was like, okay, let's pause. I want to take some pictures. I was like, fuck that. Fuck that. And I did it anyways, but like with face like this. Yeah. Let's get over
it. Just do it. Just do it. Yeah, I remember.
But it's Milos. There's Milos.
Yeah, I know. I know. And he'd have us do it on that spot in the middle of the gym. And there'd be people that are training there. He'd be like, hey, get out the way, you fucking idiot. Oh, my God.
Look, it's not just training. It's training and then pausing for half an hour.
Pausing.
And it's not just pausing. It's done first pausing and pausing for his camera.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Oh, no, twisted. Yeah. Twisted more. Oh, more. Yeah. I don't know, 10,000 pictures.
Oh, my God. It's unbelievable. He fucking loves it. He loves it.
Oh, he's the best.
He's the best.
He's
the best. So, obviously, you just mentioned you being in shape, heading out to the Olympia, what was the biggest you've ever been? What was the biggest Dennis Wolf as on being on that scale?
Oh, the biggest Dennis Wolf was 2009, I think. 143 kilos. I think it's 310, 312 pounds. And that was no fun. It was a lot of pressure. I didn't felt great. Yeah. And of course, there are other issues which come with forcing yourself to eat, being that big. This is getting the first meal in the morning.
315 pounds. My producer just told me, 315 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah. Sorry, that lot, that's that first
lot,
meal.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. I just want to make sure if the viewers knew. It's not 310, it's 315.
315. That's crazy.
Freaking huge, man.
It's crazy, yeah. But like I said, it even started to look unhealthy. It's not just my feeling back then when I was so heavy. I felt, oh, man, I don't want to eat. I don't want to move. All that. It's all heavy. And the first meal was the worst part of the day.
What was that meal? And you working with Chad then, right?
I worked 2009. Yes, Chad.
Yeah,
Chad.
So a lot of food.
Yeah, but I tried to switch all the meals, like in the beginning, to find the right meal which I could keep inside me, inside the stomach.
And what does that mean, by the way, for the viewers?
Look, I get to the point that when I was getting up in the morning, just thinking about food would kind of make me puke already. And then I stopped eating normal meal and jumped over to the shakes, right? So it's faster in your stomach. And I was hoping to keep the most of it in because that was like traveling, right? So you get your breakfast in and then you sit in the car and already having this. Or going to the airport, trying not to eat. And then drinking a coffee just to have something in your stomach. And it goes off and you start puking. And things like this. I think it's so much pressure on the organism from being that heavy and forcing yourself to eat because that was most important part. This. And that's what I never liked, actually. And that's why I love the way I have my life right now.
It's like Mercedes twins.
Yeah, man. No issues at all. I get up in the morning, make my pancakes.
Yeah.
And then the last meal of the day is pancakes too. So, and in between that, I eat
more pancakes.
I eat a lot of red meat or red fish. So this is my basic diet right now.
I still want to talk on the topic of being the heaviest because obviously we've got a big diehard core bodybuilding fan base on you and they're all massive fans of Dennis Wolf. And they followed your career. Going back to the times that you've not spoken much about, like the appetite side of things. I know you've not spoken much about it. We've spoken about it. We've connected on so many different things over the years, which we'll talk about later on in the podcast. But one of the things, I don't know how it was, but you were competing at the time and we brought up appetite. And you were one of the first pros that were top of the tree that was talking about lack of appetite that I could relate to. So over the years, you and I have... I've asked you things, questions and this and that, and you just like flex, I don't even have the answer. I'm blending, I'm shaking, I'm trying to get anything in my stomach and keep it down.
Believe me, that blending chicken stuff, bullshit, I tried once.
And, I do it.
No fucking way. Oh, I can't do that. I don't know way.
I had to.
Just the feeling in my mouth and going down, it will feel like I drink vomit. fuck that. I could do that. So I will throw it out, throw up again. So
well, I did many
but
times.
But in the morning, that was the shake, which saved my day. Sometimes I even waited like 2 hours before I could get it in. And after that, everything went smooth. But the first meal of the day was the worst.
I woke up nauseous too.
Yeah.
So take us through your biggest meal plan. What would it be? Proteins, carbs, fats. What was the food ounces at your biggest, and what was a successful day of eating?
All right, I would say 6 meals a day. Yeah. That was the basic. In the off season, I would cut it to 5 because sometimes you make some changes depending on what's going on, how you feel, and if I would cut to 5 a day, the meals will be bigger. So I made sure that. We don't count the first meal because the first meal was like protein and oatmeal and anything else what I could blend in, some even fruit or berries. But the other 4 or 5 meals, they were like 350 grams of chicken or other meat with as much as possible on carbs.
As much as possible.
As much as possible. Or I will eat my meal like 150 grams of rice. Or so I will make sure I will have 100 grams, 150 grams of carbs each meal. And, I know, 60 to 70 grams of protein. And if I feel like, oh, there's still room, I will eat some good stuff. Like dry cake, not so much sugar in it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, anything like that. So I will kind of fill up the rest in my stomach, but not with the clean stuff anymore. Yeah. So clean stuff was the basic. Uh-huh. I needed to have the meal in, and if there still was room for anything, I will fill it up.
So what is this dry cake? Is that the secret?
No, dry cake, anything but is dry. So I won't eat, I don't know, cheesecake and shit like that. Yeah. You know, that's disgusting. Anything what is like dry, German cakes. Okay. My wife will bake something, or I will order something in the German bakery here in Las Vegas. They will bake some dry cake. So tasty, nice. Not too sweet, not too much sugar. Yeah, I've been ordering some stuff too, yeah, to make my off-season as simple as possible.
Did I meet that guy when I went in at breakfast with you? You said, oh, this is the guy you own in German.
No, that's the owner of the original pancake house.
Oh.
Yeah.
There you go, talking about pancakes again.
Not the bakery.
See, yes. I do it. Eh?
Yeah, you remember. Yeah,
there you go, there we go. There's not many Germans floating around Vegas that I've met. And all the ones I've all met through you.
Yeah. Hey, there are two German bakeries.
Go ahead.
But my wife, she knows the owners or more the ladies who work there. But yeah, but then I think the owners, they change like twice already. Right. So yeah, every time somebody buys it off and makes their own business.
It's probably because you weren't fucking eating from there after you retired.
Yes, yeah. They went bankrupt.
They went bankrupt. Oh, shit. He's not coming for that German dry cake anymore. But you mentioned Katja. You guys have been together. Oh my gosh. How long have you been together, you guys?
We have. So next month, we'll be married 20 years.
Wow, congratulations.
20 years, man. 20 years
congratulations.
Married.
Congratulations.
Next month, yes. And we got married in the first state, Delaware.
Oh.
Yeah.
In the U.S.? Yes. I didn't know that.
Yeah, in the U.S., yeah. I have a great friend. He's a reverend.
Yeah.
And he invited me to Philadelphia to guest post in 2003. So I was nobody yet, but he had fun. And I asked him when I was in Philadelphia, I asked him, I asked you something, would you marry me and my girlfriend? He's like, yes, for sure.
I'm not paying you extra, Dennis, for this, okay?
So she should fly in.
Yeah.
So she came then a couple of days later, and we got married.
Wow.
Yeah. Most people are Germans or from abroad. They go to Las Vegas to get married.
Yeah.
But that was the first date. It's not bad at all. Delaware.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But the only problem is, I think, fuck up Biden's from Delaware.
Right? Oh, my God. Listen, I don't need my YouTube getting fucking demonetized now, okay?
Cut it out.
We're talking. Tatias is laughing in the back. No, but we every time we talk, we mentioned our friend earlier at the beginning of the podcast. And I'm busting your balls. I'm busting your balls. Trust me. We've popped a few cherries on this podcast talking about various different conspiracy theories and whatnot.
Okay.
Yeah. But before I move on to something in somewhat of a similar topic, I do want to talk about Katja, because you guys have been together through thick and thin. You guys have been an absolute strong couple goals, as they say, hashtag couple goals. And truly, she has been with you from the beginning of your career before, as you mentioned, before you were anybody, right?
Yeah.
How was that for a relationship? Getting to know one another, and then you have this massive skyrocket and become the superstar you became in the sport.
So we met in 2001. End of 2001, and I think she understood that my goals are different than the other guys. Mm-hmm. So I was straightforward. Even if I lost my job and this and that, I would make sure I'll do anything to finance my sport, right? Mm-hmm. And after a while, she was with me on the train. So the connection was just perfect. Yeah. She understood. And she supported me from the day one. Even, I think, the first date, she was like, you want me to cook you some rice? I said, no way.
You knew. Yeah. That's like the key words in body.
No, I don't need rice. Yeah, and then she will support me in any direction. And this is what I'm really thankful for, that also finding a person who understands you, who loves you, and want to go the way with you. This is not easy, yeah, especially today. But back then, for myself, of course, my wife is 8 years older than I am. And it's some people was like, she's older, you're young, and some idiots. But I never had an issue with that.
Yeah.
And and like I said, from the beginning on, it worked perfectly. I will take her to all my appearances mostly. And even, you remember, you were at Tono's house. And
I was going to mention that, right? Too, yeah.
So he invited me and my wife together. Yeah. And that was a sign that everybody already understood that I'm always traveling with my wife, yeah, if possible. You know, even before I turned pro, I paid for all the flights, hotel, going to the World Championships to China. So I was working for that. I was guest posing as an amateur at the gyms and will save up to cover it up.
Yeah.
So I was always taking care of all that stuff. And then as we decided to move to United States, she was, of course, full in and the biggest support I could ever wish for.
You guys came straight to Vegas?
Yes, but in 2008, we will stay at Dennis James' house for 2 weeks, 2 weeks before the Olympia in 2008. Mm. And the plan was to move to Phoenix, right? Yes. Peoria, Phoenix. But my wife said, I want to move to Vegas.
Yeah.
And back then, I was traveling a lot too by myself. And I knew I have some obligations from BSM because I signed with them. And I moved to the United States, and I knew I would be traveling every weekend. And that would happen. And I wanted to have my wife happy. If I'm gone, I don't want her to stay at home. Nothing to do, or I don't be in here, or living here in the city. Yeah, that was her wish. And we moved to Vegas.
Yeah, and she loves it?
Yes.
Vegas,
yes,
of course.
Yeah. The best weather is dry, is always sunny.
Yeah.
And it's right now, you are here right now from Florida. And you've been in Tennessee. No, you've been to what? First you were in...
Go on.
Reno. I remember.
My man.
Reno, Tennessee, and Florida, and now here.
You got it.
Vegas is going to turn into, what is it, Saint-Tropez or something like that, because we got like... Formula One here. We got the UFC. We have all the superstars living here now.
Yeah?
Even the Hollywood, they plan something like to open here to cast whatever some people.
Oh, really?
Well, I heard it, but I don't know.
Going back to the Vegas thing, I'm moving. You were trying to get me to Vegas a long time ago, and you were telling me just how much real estate was, how cheap it was way back. Oh, my gosh. I remember you signed with BSN, you had that massive house. I don't think you're living in a house now, but it was massive. And you also had that, the Mustang, the limited edition Mustang or something.
No, was I never it? Had Mustang.
What
I,
was it?
I don't like Mustang.
What was it? You had a Sentinel?
It was the
Ford.
Challenger.
Oh, the Challenger.
Some special edition. I don't know. They built like 2,000 of them.
Yeah, I just remember that. Yeah. And I was like, and you were trying to lure me in. Look, come in. Yeah.
Well, look,
help you get in with BSN, you said.
Back then, it was right after the big crash in 2008. Mm-hmm. So we moved in 2010. So imagine the prices were basically half. So you will buy a house which was built for 1.2 million for 600,000.
Man.
It's crazy. And we're heading that direction right now, but I hope it's not going to happen, but it doesn't look good. But that was the time. But look, that's where we go to, cheap. Most people say, now it's all cheap in the United States because of that. Houses are cheap. But hey, $500,000 for a house is cheap? Come on.
Yeah, I know. Well, with Europe now has gone, cheap is not cheap either. But you mentioned Vegas, and there was another lure to me coming out to Vegas to Ed Connors. And Ed Connors, is, as you mentioned, is had a big part in your life, big part in my life too. Did Ed bring you out to Vegas first?
He wanted me to come to the USA's.
Yeah.
USA's is always in Vegas, and he wanted me to be there in 2004.
Okay.
Because I visited him, I think it was beginning of summer in 2004, and it was August or something, the USA's.
In California, you visited him?
In Palm Desert.
Palm Desert. I helped him move there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh,
so
okay.
You're like kind of after me. I helped him move to Palm Desert. I was his last house guest on the beach.
Okay.
Yeah, filling the gaps.
We had that house in the mountains, so you will look over the valley. So it was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Ed has been, obviously, he speaks about us both. We're both in his book. You read his book? Yeah. Shout out to Ed Connors. Helped out tremendous.
Yes,
tremendous
definitely.
Amount of us athletes.
Great personality and always helping out
athletes,
young athletes especially. So he explained to me that he is bringing the athletes to United States to motivate him so they can see and understand that anything is possible.
That's
anything
true.
Is possible. And also to let him enjoy some good times.
Yeah. You know,
in California, like sunny and everything.
Yeah. So, yeah. I remember coming off the plane, Ed showed me this house and I was like, okay, what do I do now? I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm on my own? Yeah. Oh, shit, okay, yeah. But that's what he done. He brought all these athletes in from around the world, and he connected fellow other athletes. I remember in the house when I was staying, there was Jeremy Freeman from
WrestleTech.
Yeah.
Okay.
Back then. There was a couple other athletes that were coming and going, but some house guests have moved out. John Cena was in the house and just moved out when
yes,
I was
there. Yes, yeah, he was telling me that story, yes. Back then, he was bodybuilding.
He was bodybuilding, John, kind of a story that maybe the viewers have heard, but John was the last house guest, the guest in that room. He moved out the day before. I moved in, and they obviously told me his name. Didn't know from anything. And they said he's gone to this TV show called Tough Enough, which is where he got his break.
Oh,
it was like the contender series for UFC, WWF, WWE.
Ed sent me pictures and said, yeah, that's the next superstar. He's going to be a superstar in WWE.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And then a few years later, my little brother was watching Marine. What are you watching? And I was in Germany.
Marine.
It's
the movie.
Yeah, Marine. He's like, what is it? Is it good? I said, of course it's good. It's John Cena in it.
That's crazy.
What?
Didn't you ever get tempted to go into the WWE?
No.
No. Did you get any offers?
I think that was in my childhood.
Yeah.
I had no connection to that. And
Ed didn't try and get you in?
No.
Wow. Because Ed's fucking opened the door for so many people.
But I think he knew I was focusing on being a professional bodybuilder. Yeah. I remember having issues not getting the pro card. So I reached out to him. Hey, what should I do? He's like, I don't know. It's politics. It's a German side where I had to decide we're applying for the pro card for this guy or not.
I want to talk about your injury. I know it's a bit of a touchy subject for you.
Always.
But I don't know if you've... I haven't seen you talk about it too much, but we all followed the rehab, and I remember one video that you posted, and you were quite very open and honest about it. You were in the doctors in Germany, and you had lost a lot of weight, and you were going in to have your first surgery. Take us back to the time where the incident happened. You knew something had happened. And then how fast did things transpire after that, where you couldn't train like you used to?
Yeah. Ooh, I know where to start. But first, what happened to me when I start feeling something is not okay. And it was the time I was going to Germany for a long tour, right? Like guest appearances, expos like FIBO. And I would sit in a plane and lean my head back and would feel a painful stitch, right? Like in my neck. So, oh man, it's probably something I was sleeping not okay, or something is pulled, whatever. And it didn't go away for the next 3 days. So after, I think, 3 weeks, I came back to Vegas and I felt like one side will be pulled up, right? So I felt my body was was crunched, right? Like twisted and crunched. So I went to my massage therapist. So after two sessions, everything was fine. I felt great again. So after that was perfectly, I was training. And a few months later, I was in the gym training back. And I was doing rows, barbell rows. And somehow, one side wasn't connecting anymore. If you row, one side will go the right up and the other side will kind of twist.
Really?
So I'm like, what the hell is that? And then I went to a doctor. They didn't know what, and then put me under the MRT. MRI, I'm sorry. MRT is in German and Russian, so MRI. Sorry. MRI, and then they will see, okay, that's C3, 4, 5, and 6. And the most damage was between 3 and C4. That's the two discs which were fused. And the guy said, look, man, you need a surgery. And I was scared, and I didn't understand probably what was the issue, right, or how bad it was. And he told me, he showed me his last client. He was a SWAT team member. And he said, hey, he's kicking the doors in again. So after 6 months, don't worry, we're going to fix you up.
Yeah.
Okay, I think two weeks later, I went under the knife. Everything went well. No pain, nothing anymore. The left side felt great, no differences. And after a few weeks, I got the green light to start training. And it didn't get better. It didn't get better. So I needed some extra time to force my side to do the same what the other side did. So it took me like, I don't know, half a year or so. And then I decided to make a comeback because I felt, okay, now I'm ready to go. And also that will be sitting in my head. Is it the right decision? And if yes, that could be your last show. Because I didn't know how my prep will go. Will I finish my prep? Will I bring the same package as always or worse? And how worse? But I didn't think I would be better than before. So that was the issue.
You knew that?
No, I knew it. But I needed it for myself to understand where I'm standing. And just retiring because I don't feel anything or some issues during the training wasn't an option for me.
Yeah.
And then during the prep, I start feeling, man, it's not going well. It's not the same. I couldn't even use the stuff I always were using. So I will be using maybe a quarter of it. So no appetite, no nothing, no drive. But I still kept pushing myself because I thought if I stop my comeback prep right now, I will never do it again. And I pushed through and went on stage and got to see what's up with me. So I finished, at the Arnold second last?
I was there, yeah.
But I knew it during the call-outs. That's the end. That's the end. And it made me sad and more sad. And, of course, I had an obligation with Tony to go to Australia, and that's why I went and competed there. But I knew already it's just enjoy that. Yeah. That's your last show, and that's it.
Yeah.
It was a very difficult time. Not during my prep for comeback, but after that, I was destroyed. You know? So I was down. I wasn't thinking straight. I was confused. I was mad. I was pissed. Yeah, I was 37, 38. You know what I mean? That's the prime time. It's a prime time. And then as a bodybuilder, and yeah, that was pretty bad.
How did you get through that?
My wife, my daughter, conversations, having good time, good talks, and spending a lot of time, kind of being together and just focus maybe on new things which might come next. Because I was thinking if one door closes, another door gets open, and it was like the chapter in my life was the worst, I will say. And it took me at least 2 years.
2 years?
2 years where I said, I don't care anymore that I can't look like that anymore. I don't care anymore that my career is over. I don't care anymore that I don't feel great in my own skin. Even going to the restroom, you look in the mirror and fuck it. So that was everything, like little by little, what was crashing me, my mind. And after 2 years, like left, right, up and down, and all of that stuff, I finally kind of let it go. And after that, it was all good. So that's why I like the way I look right now. So I don't care.
Oh, I told you, you look fucking fantastic.
Thank you.
People are striving to look like you, what you currently look like. And as bodybuilders, we're so in our own heads the majority of the time. I've dealt with not as much as what you've gone through. We've lived in our own gorilla suit for 2 decades. You've been training since you were a young teenager, and you're aiming to be that magazine. You get there and you look at yourself, you're still not the magazine, but to others you are the magazine. So when all of a sudden it's falling off you, whether it's through injury or whether it's with me, I decided that I was done, you're known for that. And then people look at you differently, they judge you differently. And sometimes mainly, and I think this is now the case because I can look at myself from a different perspective, that it's a lot in your head. You're overthinking a lot of the shit.
It's all of it in your head. And sometimes just you need just to let it go sometimes. Just maybe for a day or two, just to feel better, yeah. Just not to think about it all the time. But I remember it took you also also some time to make the decision. I remember all the treatment in Colombia and all of that. Yes, yeah. And I understand how it is. And it's a very difficult time, but as soon as you're over it or get through it, it's starting. Everything gets better. Even if you lie in your life, there's so many directions you can go.
Yeah.
But of course, you connect everything to bodybuilding because that's the job you did or the life you lived.
Yes.
For the last 20 years, and that's half of your life.
Yeah.
So that's why it's so difficult.
It's true. But we've looked at it now from, okay, so I say, I can get into my head of why, okay, I'll backtrack again. There's days where I miss it tremendously. I miss the look. I miss that feeling of just fucking being able to lift anything I wanted to. But then I also remember, shit, I remember how I felt. The nausea, the fullness of just having to eat all the time with stuff we've already covered. So then when you start pouring yourself into the cons, you remember what you miss, but then you forget about what you hated. And I've kept that alive by reminding myself, because there's times, just listen, fans hit me up, oh, please come back, please make a comeback. I say, yeah, maybe I'll do it for the fans. And then my wife reminds me, it's like, you beat it 7 meals a day. We probably blend in 2 to 3 of them. And it's not going to be like it was. It's a different mindset. You're starting now from the back foot. And I take my hat off to you because a lot of people don't understand how hard it is to come back from an injury, let alone an injury that has been operated on and is spinal. That is career threatening. So for you to go through that process of being this 280, 90, 300-pound bodybuilder, going to Germany, having this emergency surgery, getting that, the spinal stuff
done.
In the US, but getting that procedure done, then having to lose weight because that assists the recovery aspect, and then having to start all over again. That journey in itself was one that you went after yourself. It was more, I'm sure you found through that process, it's like this, I'm doing this for me. Regardless, I'm not going to look like I used to, but I'm doing this for me.
Exactly.
Is that how you found?
Yes, exactly. You think a lot. You think a lot over and over. But mostly that's gets you not to your goal.
Yeah.
So you're just crushing your mind with all this bullshit, what you actually don't need. It's all in the past. You just maybe try to find some explanation. Why did it happen? Why me? Maybe. And until you get there where you say, like you mentioned before, all that nasty stuff, you forget. Only the good things you keep in mind. Oh, that was, I looked like that. But how hard it was, you always forget. But I think that helped me to kind of focus on something new. Start coaching, working with athletes. And that helped me a lot. Just to push my energy, not into myself anymore, but to young, talented guys.
That's what you're doing right now. You brought a lot of athletes in the Olympic weekend to the Dragons.
I had 4 athletes here,
On all of them, the calling card for every one of them that walked into this gym was outrageous conditioning. Outrageous. And I look at that and I go, man, that's Dennis Wolf. That's
the hardest work. My athletes, they work really hard. And that's great discipline they have. But at the end, that's Olympia. And I was competing first time at my first Olympia in 2006. They won't even take a look at me. And looking in the pictures right now, comparing to the people right now who's competing now, that will be already like, really? You didn't make the top 15?
Yeah.
So that's where I start putting my energy in. And it makes me happy to see it succeed with help of my experience. So maybe I'm not the expert in everything, but experience is very hard to compare to anything you learn, or read, and then this is a big plus.
Absolutely.
I would say.
And then you've got your shows too. You got the Dennis Wolf.
Yes, sir. This is actually this weekend, Saturday, April 8th in Bochum. It's Westfalia. Yeah, I'm flying out on Wednesday straight to Düsseldorf. And then I have four guest stars. Nadine Huberin, she was here also during the Olympia weekend.
Okay.
And Alexander Westermeier, Dennis Reinhold, he is doing his pro debut this year. And Vlad Sukoruchko is also guest posing at my show. So I'm excited. We have, 120 athletes right now registered. And,
Oh, that's pre-registered. Wow.
Yeah.
And more to come.
Yes, I think. And we are almost sold out. So I think, 50, 80 tickets are left. And we're pretty good, yeah. Oh, so fantastic. I'm excited very much, yes.
Is there anything else that's going on in the world of Dennis Wolf?
I'm going fishing after my trip.
You're going
after
fishing?
My trip.
So fucking random.
After my trip to Germany, I come back with my younger brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we go fishing.
Where?
I think Utah and California.
Trout? Salmon? What are you looking for?
Pike.
Pike? European pike?
Pike, yeah, pike. I think it's Northern pike, Pike, and bass, of course, because that's mostly fun fish to catch, because they fight, grabs it and pulls and all stuff. I'm not the fisher, so I went
fishing.
In 2019 with my friend to California, Bishop. Was amazing time. I used to fish in Russia, but my younger brother and my dad, they're like hardcore fisher.
Can you believe this fucking guy, Tyus, talks about fishing at the end of the podcast? Now I'm going to talk about fishing. I fucking love fishing. So carry on. We got to go. I didn't realize that Vegas has good fishing. I didn't know that. I only found that recently.
Oh, there's a lot, man. A lot of places to go.
Yeah.
I didn't know that either.
Not me.
But as soon as we made it up, me and my brother, to go fishing here, I was looking up the spots. Hey,
Utah's
man,
good.
So
Utah's
much
good.
Stuff. Utah
is good.
And California. So I'm trying to get some beautiful places so my brother can see, not just some dry lake in the desert. There's nothing around it, and that doesn't make some fun. But somewhere in the woods.
I love all that stuff.
Yeah.
You go hiking and everything.
Yeah. We need to be careful with the fucking bears in California.
They look at you fucking. They'll run the other direction, man. They'll be like, what the hell is this fucking albino bear coming towards me with blonde hair?
As long as it's not a grizzly bear, I'm cool. Anything else is maybe not that aggressive, but grizzly will be the end.
Yeah.
And you know what? I can't carry a gun in California.
You can't.
No. So, Utah it is.
I was going to say something. I'll keep that off the podcast. As one thing I do want to mention for the viewers that I've never spoken about, and I know you have small. I know you know what I'm going to talk about, right? Or maybe not. So,
I guess.
me and Dennis both had won the Arnold Classic.
Same year.
Same year. Same show. We're sitting backstage waiting for Arnold to come, and he's running late. So I don't know how we got on this subject, but we start talking about ancient aliens and pyramids and everything else. And then my mind exploded because I'm carb depleted. I probably ate as much carbs as I've ever eaten in 12 weeks in one night. And then there it is. Dennis Wolf, my friend, is telling me that not only is he into this in a big way, but he was heading after the Arnold Classic to get a personal tour in one of the pyramids by none other than one of the guys who was on Ancient Aliens. Tell the viewers about this.
Erich von Däniken. I've been reading a lot of books. I used to have a show in Europe back in the day.
Yeah, so he was bodybuilding, right?
Huge. And then also Giorgio Tsoukalos.
With the hair.
Yes, with the hair.
Yeah.
He's actually from Switzerland. And he told me that he was the promoter of the San Francisco Pro.
Shut the fuck up. Come on, bro.
I couldn't believe it. What? Yes, he was promoting that show. You remember that?
Of course. Yes. San Fran, Lee Priest won it.
Yeah, so he was the promoter.
Oh, my God.
Like you see, the world is so small. And yes, I went on a two-week trip with, I don't know, like all the people on the list were professor, doctor, blah, 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 and I'm a stupid bodybuilder.
Not stupid, but you're huge.
But people think that.
Rebounding after the Arnold Classic,
too. Yeah, yeah. So I landed in Mexico City, and we had a meetup. So, like, dinner and meet up to see who is in the group. Like I said, they were all doctors or like business owners. And you know what? Eric just walked towards me, introduced himself, and we start talking. So very humble, cool guy,
yeah.
And anybody else. But how I got to meet Giorgio? So the lady posted a group photo. We were sitting, like, all the group in front of Pyramid. And Giorgio commented on Facebook, "Is that Dennis Wolf?"
No.
And she came to me like, "Hey,
yeah,
check this out." Hey. I said, "Oh, man." And then I went always to the meetings. I think I was going 4 years straight. The meetings were always in Germany, October.
Oh, my god!
So it's like after Olympia, I was guest posing in Europe and connected that. So I was there many times. And then that's where I got to meet Giorgio and we talked. And he's a cool guy, funny guy. Yes, yeah, a lot of fun together. But that trip was incredible. Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, and what else? I don't remember.
You also had access that no people are normally allowed to have.
We had a private tour. Yeah. We had helicopters, charters.
Chartered, yeah.
Yeah. So we would fly from the hotel with the chopper into the jungle. They would
get the chopper. You got to say it without accent.
The chopper. So they will drop us off and leave. Yeah. And you will be standing in the jungle. And that was full with all the tree and bushes. You couldn't even see that there's a pyramid behind that. And even with the chopper, they will fly over a pyramid, which is probably, they will probably know that there's a pyramid, but it's not cleaned up. So it's still like middle in the forest, right? So you will make a loop. We'll see, like, everybody would hang with the camera.
You're like, Dennis, put that 300-pound to the other side. Fucking choppers on its side.
Hey, I'm telling you, that was the best vacation, except the vacation I did with my wife, but adventurous vacation.
Put that in.
Yes. Adventurous vacations, that was it, man. Unbelievable. And also, what was fun, every night was a buffet, and Eric will tell us stories he will never probably put even in his books.
Yeah.
Fun, man, really amazing time.
Was there anything that you seen that kind of reassured you that what you believed in was having seen something? Everybody can have this. Again, there was an attraction for you to go there, right? You had a common interest, knowing, maybe not knowing, or maybe it was just the aspect of you just being curious. But then was there anything that you seen that you were like, man, there must have definitely been civilization, technology is something you've seen as well?
Yes, off the definitely stonework, how that was cut, and the pyramids, like, that was in Guatemala, there was a pyramid, there was a dragon on it.
A dragon?
Yes, kind of weird.
Fucking original dragon slam it.
Yeah, so dragon, so it's more Asia, Chinese, but there was a dragon, so that was interesting. But that was all like Eric, his theory is that we're aliens who came here and built that shit. I don't think so. I have another theory. I think we just had a advanced civilization with better technology back then, and that's it. But we just start discover it. If you see the pyramids in Egypt, right? So when Napoleon discovered them, they were buried in sand. So that's with most of pyramids. So what happened, right? So what happened? Why is it buried? So why some pyramids are buried with a lot of, what is it, ground? It's not sand, but ground. So
soil.
Soil, yeah, sorry. Not English good.
Not English good.
So things like that get me into another direction. I think that's my opinion, of course. We're going already to something we have no idea what was before us.
Yeah.
But I think there were many civilizations before us, and it just kind of, just maybe long time ago, and we just started to discover a couple things.
I don't think we'll ever have the answers.
No, never.
Because we're going to wait a couple hundred years for somebody to visit. But with that being said, since you and I were speaking about it, now all these new discoveries are coming out and the US are confirming this and that. And back when you and I were talking about it, it wasn't many people that I knew were talking about it. Yeah. And now so many people are, I knew it all along. No, you fucking didn't. Shut up, bro. You calling people kooks. Now all of a sudden it's cool to talk about it, but that was a massive passion for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. You're still into the, you're not as into it as much though, you said.
Oh, right? Not anymore, because the subject gets too boring, too not interesting enough for me anymore. I'm not changing the subject, but yeah. I try to find something I can grab on which is more interesting.
What is that now for you?
Look, man, so much stuff is going on, and look, some issues with the economy, right? And what they're bringing up, oh, there's a spaceship coming close to the Earth. Bullshit like this. This is why I don't believe in aliens anymore. That's fact. I don't believe that. If they were here, they will visit us, right? But they're not. It's all bullshit. That's what I think. It's my opinion. I don't know if people think they're still like aliens out there, but we're all watching the space movies, Star Wars. Isn't it cool? Right? Cool, right? It's, oh man, that's fantastic. Like flying cars and stuff. But that could never work. And I think we have some visitors, but it not necessarily means they're from another planet. Maybe they're from somewhere else.
Oh.
Yeah. Another Earth or place where, I don't know, maybe another dimension. I don't know. But I don't think that's aliens. It's just, I can believe that. Mm-hmm. Because until I don't see someone standing here and yeah. or landing in front of my nose yeah. with a spaceship, then I start believing.
To be honest, I've seen a couple of aliens. You were fucking one of 310 pounds, my friend. On that note.
Hey, for most people, we look like aliens. Yeah. What the hell is this?
Yeah.
So even today, if I look at my pictures, honestly, I can't believe I was like that.
There's a back double bicep you have.
I
remember seeing. And you're, I don't know where you're on the gym, but I remember seeing that photo you're doing like a, yeah, I think you said something about, I think Derek Farnsworth worked in
yes,
you and opened you up.
You remember that scary video with Derek Farnsworth?
Oh, yeah.
He was massaging and giving me.
Oh, that was after that.
Giving me the deep tissue massage.
Yeah.
That picture was right 2 or 3 days after that.
He opened you right up.
Yeah, yeah. So I came home, I was destroyed.
Yeah.
Basically, it was the time everything was going well. I would fly like once a week. In the morning, I would fly to San Diego and come back.
You were doing that.
Yeah. Did a few times. And yeah. So that was the day I came back. I was so destroyed, man. Yeah. I was like, man. Had a long recovery night. In the morning, I was still not able to train, but got some pump in. But the day after, I felt great. And then I did train back. And that's the picture. That's the picture, man.
And I think that broke the fucking internet, man.
Yes. Back it then, did. That was... Scary looking. And I was about, I think, 295 at the time.
Just before the Arnold, right?
That was right before the Arnold, but I think 8 weeks out or 7 weeks out. And massive.
Unbelievable. Yeah, yeah. Unbelievable. Matt, listen, I know that you have to get out of here. I have to get out of here.
Unfortunately, we'll talk forever. We need to repeat that.
I'm sure we're going to get a lot of comments below about the ancient aliens as well as what Dennis Wolf looked like. People, he is an alien. That's why he's trying to throw us off the scent. But as always, a pleasure, mate. Always exciting to see what you've done, see what you're doing. We have these, even though we live in Las Vegas, now that you've got the gym, I used to see you quite often. You're at the Dragon's Den, but now you've got the Wolf's Den.
I train in the morning, 6 a.m. It's that. I don't want to go to a gym at 6 a.m. No. So I just walk out of the door of the garage and do my stuff, and then it's it.
But what I was going to say is I think the viewers would love to see me come up the Wolf's Den, and maybe when the sun starts coming out and the heat starts popping up and we get some spillover heat from the night before, I'll come and train in the morning. Is it always 6 a.m.?
At the moment, yes. We get some sunburn. That's important.
At 6 in the morning?
No, nothing.
Okay.
But in summer.
I'm up before summer. Now. Yeah. I'm up before. How,
you
were about
five? I saw your stories. You're going up like... You're doing cardio in the morning?
Yeah, I get up, work, and then I do cardio about 6. Okay. So it works out perfect. I can get up, I can work, I'll jump in a car, 10 minutes away.
Listen, brother, maybe you never told you, but I'm so proud to see you being successful, coming to Vegas, opening the gym.
Thank you, man.
That podcast, being you, hey, you've been champion probably... the best ever who could be the 12 champ. And man, all the best. And I hope we do the part two very soon. And man,
no question.
All the best to your family, and love you. And yeah, keep it up, my man.
Love you too, my man. And signing off, we are now both U.S. citizens.
Congratulations.
Congratulations to you too. That's it. The main man, the legend, the man they call, Dennis Wolf. Straight out the lair. Out.